All right, good morning, everybody. You know, this is one of the most exciting programs I have attended, and that given how many KITP programs I've attended, that's a pretty strong statement. It's pretty incredible. Anything that you're interested in, one electron physics, electron-electron interaction, electron-phonon interaction, it doesn't really matter what it is, this subject allows you to study it. I mean, I was getting very worried that still was giving a talk on one electron physics, band structure physics, I was getting very worried. Then he,
I learned it, thanks to my brilliant collaborator.
Then he helped me. Eventually he used the word that I was hoping he would use, spin liquid. I mean, a talk by Santil which doesn't have the word spin liquid, you know, worry me that what's happening, he's getting old or something. All techniques in condensed matter physics that we use are being manifested in this field. And any phenomenon that we know or we like, as Alan said, you know, superconductivity we love, ferromagnetism we love, topological matter we love, anomalous Hall effect, quantum anomalous Hall effect we love, all of them seem to be manifested in a Morse system. It's kind of hard to believe. It looks like theorists are doing this thing, but it all came from experiment, right? I mean, so it's because theorists were not imaginative enough, as Alan said, that theorists talked about flat band, but then we mumbled about like strange things, like Wigner crystallization or something like that. So, but you know, to me, another very important thing as a very phenomenological solid state physicist is that in solid state physics, we have a few tools which make the subject interesting. We change doping or density by gating. And that takes us, that changes the interaction scale. We apply pressure to change band structure, allowing interaction scale or Fermat coupling to change. We apply magnetic field to quantize orbital motion. Again, it allows us to see things like fractional quantum Hall effect. We change temperature to study critical phenomena or high temperature physics. But I think that the work Pablo started, and we heard these very exciting talks by other groups, it has introduced a new tuning parameter into solid state physics, twist angle. And this is a very, I think, big deal, that it's not often that a new tool is introduced into physics. By twisting two-dimensional layers continuously, we can tune interaction, tune band structure, and do new physics. And I think that, you know, this 1 year, we have come very far, but I think we're going to go much farther with this new tuning parameter. And to me, that is the most exciting part of this new physics, that a new tuning parameter has been introduced into the subject. So I told you that people can study whatever they like, and what I like is strange. I think Steve Kivelson likes the word bad metal, and that's what I'll talk about. So I'll start, and this was alluded to in Pablo's talk, and Corey mentioned it a little bit also. And the interaction I'll focus on is electron-phonon interaction. So that there is no misunderstanding, let me just tell you right in the beginning, I'll not be talking about ground state physics at all. So whether the ground state is insulator or superconductor would not make any difference, or even a ferromagnet. So I would not have to worry about what interaction is causing the ground state. I'll talk about high temperature physics. We all agree there is a lattice in this system. And we all agree experiments are being done at finite temperature. So the lattice would vibrate. There will be phonons. And phonons will interact with electrons. And when phonons, electrons, and electrons interact, you have resistive scattering. Now, at what temperature scale that resistive scattering will be more important than ground state physics is a matter of empirical experimental finding. Everything I'll be talking about will apply in that regime. An experiment will tell us what regime that is, and then we'll largely understand it. So what I'll claim, what I'll be talking about, will apply independent of what ground state you have, is if you go to sufficiently high temperature where you see a metallic resistivity. Okay? And whether you see metallic resistivity or not is an experimental fact. It will turn out that in most of the situations I'm thinking about based on the experiment and also theory, it's probably 10 Kelvin is good enough. In some situation, maybe less than 10 Kelvin. So what I'm saying is independent. So for example, I'll be talking about phonons, but that doesn't mean that I'm claiming that the superconductivity arises from electron-phonon interaction. It may not. What I'll be talking about will be valid independent of what the superconductivity arises from, okay? So I just want to emphasize that so there's no misunderstanding what I'm saying. So what is a stage metal? This is actually a concept that arose maybe, I think the original paper was maybe Emery Kivelson, where they talked about bad metal. So resistivity should be linear in T down to some low temperatures. What is low depends on the context. In the experiments we are thinking about, it could be 10 to 30 Kelvin, okay? linear in behavior over a large range of temperature. That means it should not be just, you know, at 1 point, 10 to 15. It should be some large. Again, large depends on the context. Very high resistivity, sometimes approaching the so-called Mortier-Ferrigno limit, which for metals is 150 microm centimeter. For two-dimensional systems, depending on value of spin degeneracy, it's several thousand ohms. So it should be approaching that, but it's metallic resistivity, approaching that may even be higher than that. Transport scattering rate, so if you take the resistivity and convert that into scattering rate just by using through the formula, that may be of the order of this quantity KBT, which has been given a very fancy name, Planckian dissipation, you know, motivated by holographic consideration, which I'm not going to get into. So scattering rate could be very, very high. Of course, this is not a new statement. This basically means that the resistivity is very high. If it is very high, 1/tau is going to be very high also. Okay. And then, based on all these things, we have all these jargons coming in that if all these things happen, then maybe the system is a non-Fermi liquid. Maybe the quasi-particle picture doesn't apply because scattering rate is very high. And it's some kind of strongly interacting, strongly coupled viscous soup. That's the correlated strange metal. This is the kind of buzz, I would say. Whether that actually happens or not has not been established based on any microscopic model, as far as I know, in any problem. Okay, but this is what has excited a large fraction of the community. And in this system also, Pablo recently posted a paper that this system is also showing strange metallic behavior. Usually in these discussions, at least in the theoretical discussions, phonons and impurities are uncritically ignored completely. And you know, it's a very simple thing. If you take a material, no matter what its resistivity is, you can always make it larger by adding crap to it. I mean, this is just adding garbage is very easy. Resistivity will go up. So talking about some resistivity, which is limited by something, is not a very meaningful thing. At zero temperature, resistivity is finite in all metals, right? Okay. There may be. If it goes superconducting, let's leave out superconductivity. Let's say sodium. Sodium doesn't go superconducting any temperature we know. So if you go to 1 millikelvin, sodium has a finite resistivity. Obviously, 1/tau is there, much, much larger than KBT. Nobody will call that a strange metal. You know, if you go and ask Zanin, is that a strange metal? He would say no, but you'd say, why not? 1/tau is, you know, million times KBT. The reason is they're all ignoring this order and phonons. There is an implicit assumption that these effects are not important. What this assumption comes from, I do not know. Because none of these people have calculated and showed those effects are small. And what I will argue in the systems one is looking at, by virtue of the parameter values, these things can be calculated. You know, the advantage of disorder and phonon is that you can calculate quantities. Of course, the disadvantage is, and you cannot calculate these quantities. So disadvantage of this is, since you can calculate, people can raise all kinds of objections, you know. So it works both ways. You know, I can calculate quantities, but then you can give me trouble. Is your calculation accurate enough? This has great advantage. No calculation is possible. So it's obviously correct. if you don't believe me, go read the papers, okay? I mean, so this is what I'll talk about in the context specifically of twisted bilayer graphene. You'll see why I'm calling it TBLG rather than TBG. Because for me, BG would be Brock-Grunheisen, and I don't want to confuse you, okay? Here is a paper which Bruin Science, 2013, some of you may know this paper. This paper came out in Science. It doesn't really have many original results, but it reports resistivity of many materials that already existed, some from the same group. And what it concluded, and here's some results, this is strontium, ruthenite, but it's a very nice paper. A lot of resistivities are given for different materials. And then the claim is that looked at all linear over some scale. Some magnetic field had to be applied so that the superconductivity is suppressed. It's all linear, and they give a big table that if you define a scattering rate using Judah formula, which is a very powerful phenomenological formula, has three parameters, tau and mass. And often you know from Shubnikov-Dehaas or Dehaas-Van Alphen or Hall measurement, you can extract an M, you can also kind of have some idea. You can extract a 1/tau, and this paper claimed that this 1/tau for many, many, many materials, which is this KBT, this Planckian. So Planckian is everywhere. Everything is exotic, everything is strange, And it's really pretty amazing, you know, when I saw this paper, but the paper is very honest, I'll come to that point. Then more recent paper, I think it hasn't even come out yet because there is no chair physics, but it's on the archive. This is Legros specifically focusing on high TC materials. Again, resistivity is high. And here they subtracted out the zero temperature resistivity. And the point here all again is that if you take this and extract a 1/tau, assuming some reasonable value for effective mass, again, the number is comparable to KBT, which is this Planckian limit. And again, the conclusion of this paper, that isn't this absolutely amazing, there is no understanding of it, it's Planckian. Here is work, I mean, this slide was made before Pablo posted his paper. These are results taken from the two, Nature 1 and 2, of the work from MIT that started this whole thing. And here is one problem I have experimentally is a randomly plot conductivity and resistivity, okay? so with no rhyme or reason. So here is conductivity, conductance, and I'm talking about this region falling over as 1/T, so that's linear in T, but here you can clearly see resistance as a function of T. So this is something is happening in the ground state. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in this regime, where you can see it's all linear and slope for different densities are pretty much the same. And these are large resistivity. Look at that. 5,000 ohm, 5 kilo ohm, very large resistivity. This is definitely more strange than this in some sense. Beautiful linear result, which goes on to, you know, 30 Kelvin, 40 Kelvin, something like that. You can see it here. This is superconducting, but once you go to high enough temperature, you know, 8 Kelvin, 9 Kelvin, again linear. This is what I'm interested in, this strangeness, okay? So here is a talk by Steve Kivelson, and you see Dimitri's name shows up here, okay? Because I guess Dimitri must have given Steve this slide. So this is in a talk where, you know, publicized this thing, and is a linear resistivity lanthanum, sonchem, you know, cuprate, various organic materials and resistivity high and linear. So, and I'm saying it's boldly titled Metals or Quasi-Particle Picture Fail. This has no information quasi-particles. This is not ARPES, this is not STM, this is resistivity data. So I'm not sure that one can say quasi-particle picture fails. One can say very high resistivity and it's linear. Now, why do people automatically then go that if that's large, then quasi-particle picture fails? I had really great difficulty understanding it because I spent my whole life calculating quasi-particle properties for well-defined models, electron gas. And the argument is actually quite contrived. Argument goes like that. 1/tau is linear in T. 1/tau must come from an imaginary part of self-energy. That imaginary part of self-energy must be a single particle imaginary part of self-energy. So imaginary sigma omega is going as omega, so the quasi-particle picture fails. But you know, this may be true, but the microscopic model doesn't show that. I mean, phonons give you linear in T, as I'll talk about. So what I'm saying, there could be other reasons for this. Okay, it doesn't have to be quasi-particle picture fails. Another point I want to make, at a finite temperature, a Fermi gas is no longer a Fermi liquid. There is no quasi-particle at finite temperature, okay, by definition. That's a trivial failure, complete trivial failure, but it fails. Okay, yeah?
Just want to add that beautiful ARPES data on the strontium loosening.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. But they see clear quasi-particles, absolutely clear, well-defined quasi-particles.
I can't imagine they're narrower than T.
What?
Anyway, sorry, yeah. I had a different comment.
Yeah, but the thing is that, you see, the quasi-particle failure, this jargon by itself is not telling us anything, because a Fermi gas has no quasi-particle at finite temperature, right? I mean, because it's not a one-to-one correspondence in the Fermi surface. It's a trivial failure, we don't worry about it. So I'm saying we need more than this, okay? Right. This is not enough.
The Yaffe-Raichel limit, that's a different
argument. Yeah, I'll come to that. Mm-hmm.
The argument you said,
yes,
is basically the argument that starts with zero temperature.
Correct.
That's self-energy.
Correct.
Linear and
correct.
There's another argument that there's a effect of thermal flotation that
right.
gives rise linear and
sure.
so on.
Sure. But then, let me come to that. I totally agree with you. Let me come to that, and that's a very important point, okay? So this is some other figures, and I think Pablo showed some of these things. So I'll just go through. So I'll make this contention that Many of these results, let me not say all is for just for dramatic purpose, okay? All gets people going, okay? You have to find just one, so that's why I said all. Let's say many of these results, at least the ones I have looked at, can be explained and put it, explained in court, because whether it's explained or not depends on your taste. You may not accept it's explained, okay? And you'll see to what extent Pablo and Corey and Andrea's data are or are not explained. That's the one I'm going to focus on, okay? Can be explained by assuming that this bad metallicity arises from low carrier density, a factor of 100 to 1,000, I'm talking about 3D system now, lower than in normal metals, and large effective mass, plus electron-phonon interaction. If you look at all these materials, the effective mass is large, all of them. You go to Bruin's paper and look at all the material they're talking about. Effective mass is large. Legros, you look at effective mass, is always about 5. Okay, he gives the effective mass, 5 to 10. And the density is always 10 to the power 21, factor of 100 log. We have no intuition. You know, all the statements are for normal metals. So Fermi temperature is 10,000 Kelvin. And we don't have an intuition in Debye temperature region of 500 Kelvin. We have no intuition with what would happen if the carrier density is about 20 and effective mass is 10. You have to do calculations, okay? And that's what I will mostly present. Yeah.
I mean, pupillates, of course, are much higher Kelvin.
Say it again?
Pupillates, of course, are much higher.
Pupillates, when you say much higher, it's a few times and you're 21. I contacted all these people. They do not know the density very well. You know, Rigrin is my colleague, so this is, they are not 10 to the 23. They are maybe factor of 50 lower than 10 to the 23. It's something of the order of 10 to the 20 to a few times 10 to the 21.
Fermi energy incorporates its volt.
Yeah. What?
Fermi energy
is 2,000 Kelvin versus something like 20,000 Kelvin. This is what people say. Look, we can argue over this forever, but the point is that it is smaller than metals. Whether it's factor of 10 or a factor of 100, we can argue. I totally agree with you, okay?
But we're talking about graphene. If you put together the Dirac codes and the long-range Coulomb interaction, right. You get the self-energy, which is linear in M.
Say it again, please.
That if you put together the semi-metal...
Sure. Okay, so let me now go to the point. All metals have linear intransitivity. I mean, it's textbook stuff. Open any textbook. Here is copper. Okay. I mean, this is where my puzzle began. I mean, here is copper resistivity. Okay. Nothing is better known than this. It's linear all the way from something like 50 Kelvin to as high as one has measured. I mean, no. Is copper strange? I mean, the point is the definition is never. I mean, a definition of something has to be precise.
So
it cannot be except for copper. Excuse me.
That's why bad metal is a useful characterization.
Yeah, I know. You're still a student, so yeah, I understand that. But I understand that. But you
not
see when
wrong.
You no. Hold on. You are taking one possible definition of this strangeness because Steve is a very careful guy. But you look at these papers. MIR is not. I'm going to come to MIR. Don't worry about it. Okay? Because KF here. All these papers compare that with 150 micron centimeter.
In two dimensions, KF drops out.
It's resistivity. But these systems are not two-dimensional. Resistivity is measured in resistivity experiment is given micron. They measure micron. The rest is theory. Trust me, I've thought through these things. You can sit down and talk, okay? You are not going to figure out something that I have not thought about in listening to my talk. I can assure you, okay? I've been thinking about it for 10 years, okay? That doesn't mean I've solved all the problems. But the phenomenology I'm saying is correct. Okay, you may not agree with my solution of the puzzle, okay? I mean, I really have thought a lot about it, okay? The numbers. So, pure platinum. Let's look at pure platinum. Again, completely linear, okay? Here is some other compound, you know, it bends over linear. So these are all within, now I'm coming to, these are all below the Mortier-Fell limit because it's a normal metal. Mortier-Fell limit here will be up here somewhere, 150 micron. Here is some other, so Roti for good metal is linear in a very wide temperature range is always this, like this. This is the point you're making, and it's absolutely correct. They are not bad, but they're strange. Here is some other metal, a composite. I have to go to pure engineering literature to find these things. And I contacted material scientists. They said, metal composites are perfectly good metals, can have any resistivity you want. Here is an example of that. Here is tungsten, resistivity is micron, 10 micron, 20 micron, factor of 7 below Mortier-Fell regular limit. Here is a composite made of tungsten and something else, metallic resistivity. Resistivity is milliohm, okay? Way above Mortier-Fell regular limit. Okay? Here is semiconductors. So this part is, you know, it's becoming intrinsic, so it becomes an insulator. But when you go to high temperature, it's a metal. and resistivity is very high. It's 1 centimeter. There is no reason resistivity cannot be very high. So rho t can be much more than 150 micron centimeter low density metals. These are all very low density metals. With resistivity being linear in t without any sign of saturation up to 1 centimeter, I'm just summarizing this empirical fact, what I'm showing you here. These systems are neither bad nor strange. Maybe they're bad and strange, but it's understandable why they are. This is low density effect. Kf is small, so the Mott aferical limit is much higher. So you have to know Kf very carefully before you can talk about bad or strange. Now I come to a very important point. Some of you, certainly Alan MacDonald, should know this result, textbook result. That if you have electron-phonon interaction, it's actually in Mahan, so it is a textbook result. Okay? If you take electron-phonon interaction and calculate the resistivity at high temperature, where it's linear in T, then it's known that that H bar over T extracted from this resistivity is exactly equal to 2 pi lambda T. In fact, this is called lambda transport for those of you who are purists. In fact, in the 60s, even before my time, this is a big subject that you extract lambda transport from this sort of measurement, and you extract lambda superconductivity. You know, Bill Macmillan became very famous showing that, that then you extract lambda superconductivity by doing tunneling measurement. And the two of them are within 10% of each other. It shows that electron-phonon interaction is the mechanism. The same thing that's causing the resistivity at high temperature is also the quantity that's causing superconductivity. This is 2 pi lambda T. And some of you know what the value of, do you know what the lambda is in aluminum? 0.4. What? So 2 pi of this is way above Planckian limit. Okay, if you take lead, lambda is 1.5. 2 pi times lambda is like 6. It's way above. And again, when you talk about Planckian, there's an assumption. Normal metals are not Planckian, no matter how large the H1 over tau is, because you understand what they are.
And, yeah. What's the story about copper? It doesn't superconduct you.
Yeah, so copper, the coupling is very low, so we have the same thing. Okay.
So I can get lambda from here?
No. There, it would not work. It doesn't work everywhere. It's the system that goes superconducting. It works. I mean, this is not on a metallic superconductor, this thing. So people have done this sort of measurement in aluminum, lead, and so on. Where it works, they are consistent with each other. Copper, you know, one electron metal rarely goes superconducting. Lithium is the only example what the one electron metal goes superconducting, right? So my point is not with respect to superconductivity. As I said, I would say nothing about ground state. My point is that if you measure, if you take lambda, this will be much larger than KBT. That's my only point, okay?
I'm just curious, what did Macmillan say about copper?
I do not know. I have no comment on that. It's a good question. You're asking a good question. I do not know. Why does it fail? What you're asking is a different question. Why don't copper or sodium go superconducting? That's what you're asking. Okay? But I think, I know the answer. Lambda is 0.1. No, sorry. No, I know the answer. Lambda is very small in copper, okay? So we should, after the talk, we should sit down and just see what we get from Macmillan formula. His answer probably would have been mu is very large, mu star is very large. That, I think, would have been answer, that the mu star is very large. That's, I'm absolutely sure that would be the answer. Alan, is that correct?
People old enough, so somebody told me once, mu star is 0.1.
Okay, right. It's always
0.1. That was, okay, so works in many simple metals.
And lambda is 0.1, so that involves superconductivity. Okay, so that's the answer. Mu star is the answer. All right, so let me now, after all this, let me now go to the subject that we're all interested in. So here are results from the collaboration between Corey Dean and Andrea Young. They were very kind to send me all their unpublished results, which is still unpublished. So here is on this particular question. I was interested only in the question of resistivity as a function of temperature. Here are results for two densities, resistivity as a function of temperature. Here again, and main thing I was interested in, main thing I sent Andrea an email specifically asking 3 months ago that my prediction is that high temperature resistivity will be linear and the slope will be independent of density, which is a very strong statement. And he told me it actually seems that way. And you can see the low temperature behavior of these two densities are very different. One is going insulating, probably a correlated insulator. One is looks going superconducting. You know, it's not clear what's happening. But their high temperature, if you go here, they look almost parallel. And this is the point I'm going to focus on. I have nothing to say about this part. And here are some other results. So let's see more results. So there are more results that they sent us, and I'm going to go through it very fast because they presented some of those. And you can then convert this resistance into some effective dR dt, And as you can see, there are, of course, variations in it. It's not an absolute constant of the function of n. But overall, the variation is not huge, and it's all large. It's of the order of, you know, 100 ohm per Kelvin. So in two-dimensional system, as you said, there is no ohm centimeter. It's 100 ohms per Kelvin. It's per square. Okay, this is a two-dimensional system. Let me get back in a second. So this is the density dependence at some value. So for what happens in monolayer graphing? So in 2008, we did a calculation calculating electron phonon resistivity in monolayer graphene. It's a very well-defined calculation with Boltzmann theory. I mean, you have to actually solve the integral equation, but you can do it. And we showed, and our interest was actually not this high density, high temperature part where it's linear. Our interest was in this low density part, low temperature part, where you see the behavior called Bloch-Dunaisen behavior. So at high temperature, resistivity goes linear in T. At low temperature, resistivity has a power law because now the Bose occupancy factor for the phonons become important. And this has never been clearly seen in metals, because in metals, by the time this effect becomes important, at rather low temperature, you have other effects like electron-electron interaction, disorder, all these things also become important. So our point was that this may be a good material to look at this Bloch-Dunaisen behavior. These are all for different carrier density. One times, I believe, 10 to the 13, 3 times 10 to the 13, 5 times 10 to the 13. So this was a calculation with no free parameter. And 2 years after that, Philip Kim's group did a measurement. And again, I'm not going to go through the details because this is a long time ago and very well defined. Here, what we find is that it agrees quantitatively with the theory. And Bloch-Dunaisen behavior clearly seen. And I think the first time this clear T to the power 4 power law was clearly seen experimentally. But the point I want to emphasize here is not the linear behavior. The resistivity is changing here by only 0.1 ohm per Kelvin. Okay, because graphene has almost no resistance. 0.1 ohm per Kelvin. If you looked at it, resistivity here is changing by 100 ohm per Kelvin. It's a factor of 10,000 difference in d-rho dt. This is an astonishing number. I mean, this metal is indeed very, very strange because the difference is of the order of 10,000 in resistivity. Same material, but you made a Moir pattern. Resistivity goes up by a factor of 10,000. And this, we should be able to understand this, okay? So in regular graphene, d rho dt is 0.1 ohm per Kelvin. In twisted bilayer graphene, in near magic angle, it's 100 to 500 ohm per Kelvin, larger in magnitude than highly colored oxides. This number, if you look at it, it's in the higher part of his number is larger than any number in those materials I showed you before. Linear behavior is down to 10 to 20 Kelvin. So it satisfies all the criteria for strange or bad metal I wrote down in the first slide, and actually all the criteria that anybody writes down. So it's almost a factor of 10 to the power 4 increase in metallicity. So it's extreme strangeness, not just strangeness. Okay, satisfied. And this is a very simple material. It's a monoatomic material. Cuprous are very complicated material. TTFT CNT is a very complicated material. This is a very simple material. So we should be able to understand this as a point. And this is what I'll try to understand. So, yes, indeed, the answer to the question I had in the first slide, yes, the answer is twisted bilayer graphene near magic angle flatbed condition is indeed a strange metal. Now, can the mechanism be electron-phonon interaction? That's where I'll spend the last part of my talk. So there'll be some theory now, but is there any question on phenomenology? I mean, did I answer your question, or do you still have some question on it?
The question of whether a small carrier density can allow you to exceed the Yuffie-Rankel limit,
right,
that depends crucially on dimensionality.
Yes.
So if KFL is order 1, that's the Yuffie-Rankel limit.
Right.
In 2D, that's the same as having an H over E squared resistivity.
Yeah.
So
or H over 4D squared or H over 80 squared. It depends on what the validity interval is. It's not, so that's, yeah.
That was the earlier question that I
was asking. So that's absolutely correct. That's exactly what the condition is. One, there is a length. One is length independent, but it is not H over E squared. It's not 26,000 ohms. If you have degeneracy which are not lifted, then it could be H over some integer number E squared.
Sure.
Okay, so it's the same as quantum Hall, right? So what are the questions? Yeah, I completely agree.
Maybe I misunderstood. Right. Let's leave it to left.
Because I was talking about 3D and 2D separately. In 3D, one talks about roughly 150 micron centimeter. In 2D, it's H over N E square, where N is the degeneracy. That's absolutely correct.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah. Maybe you will say it. Right. Normally, this linear interior state, the electron flow in the direction.
Yes.
How many temperatures larger than some fraction of the bifurcation?
That's the rest of the talk, yeah. So hold on, ask me later, yeah.
Okay.
Okay? That's the theory part of it. That's, of course, I have to answer that. Otherwise, there is nothing. Yeah.
Terminology question.
Yeah.
If I take your slow few hundred ohms per kelvin and then combine it with Macmillan approach and get lambda,
yeah.
And then predict
yeah. It's consistent with, it's in the last part of our paper. But I'm not saying electron phone is causing. You'll get the order of 1 to 5 kelvin.
Something.
You get of the order of 1 to 5 kelvin DC.
But that's a correct order.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Before we address the mechanism for strange metal, I'm a bit confused on what the phenology actually is. In Pablo's data.
Your paper, you mean?
Yeah.
You're just being polite. Your and Pablo's papers.
But in this data, the linearity and the systematicity.
Let me come to that. This is a very important question. Santel, this is a very important question. Let me come to that. Just hold on.
I have not finished
half of my talk yet. So.
I have a suggestion.
I think that you are asking a good, very question.
Okay. The total time is about 12 minutes.
12?
You started at 5 minutes to.
Okay. I thought it's 45 minutes, isn't it?
45, right?
Oh, okay, fine. Yeah, I'll be done. So electron phonon scattering always produces a metallic resistivity at high temperature. The resistivity linear in T, and this now comes to your question, Andre, what you asked. If you look at a textbook, that says TD. First, it's not TD by. If you do the calculation, so it's an asymptotic expansion, which is linear for T much, much larger than TD. Textbooks don't give you that, but I give it as a homework problem in solid state physics class, that what is the actual thing? So if you do the next order expansion, you find there is a large number in front of it. So actual number is TD over 4, okay?
Right.
But that's only for metals, because the TD is irrelevant for resistance. For resistance, only scattering that matters is 2kF scattering, electron going forward, coming back. So that has a name. That's called Bloch-Grunheisen temperature, TBG. TBG is 2H-bar, KF times VS, energy of 2KF phonons. Now it so happens in metals, TBG is 10 times TDY. So textbooks never talk about T Bloch-Grunheisen. If you go back and read the papers of the stalwarts like Pyles and Wilson, they knew that TD is not the relevant parameter here. But everybody, of course, forgot. That's why I counted years ago. So the relevant parameter is T Bloch-Grunheisen. No, this is a very important distinction. Relevant parameter is T Bloch-Grunheisen. As long as T Bloch-Grunheisen, whichever is smaller, T Bloch-Grunheisen, TD by. If the system is low density, TD by is irrelevant. It's T Bloch-Grunheisen, okay? Divided by 4. And that will be very important in our consideration, okay? So the linearity comes at T over some temperature divided by 4. What that some temperature is depends on if T Bloch-Grunheisen is larger or smaller than TD by. In metals, it's always TD by. But in low-density semiconductor, low-density is T Bloch-Grunheisen, which depends on density, because it's proportional to KF, okay? In the high-temperature leaky potential regime, for all systems, H bar over tau is 2 pi lambda KT. In fact, it's a definition of dimensionless electron-phonon coupling. It just comes out, the dimensionless coupling, okay? For all metals. Metal here means something that has free carrier density. In normal 3D metals, this is what I already told you, lambda is 0.1, to 2. These are called strong coupling materials. Lambda, for example, is 0.4 in aluminum. So 2 pi over this is like 2.5. So in most 3D metals, violate Planckian distribution. By the way, Bruin's paper actually says that it violates. And then they turn it around and say, isn't it amazing that normal metals also violate it? Okay, so, you can go read. This is the temperature that matters, and this is proportional to, in our case, square root of n, okay? So this is the thing you have to, and it can be arbitrarily low at low carrier densities, okay? The lambda, you can take the fundamental electron-phonon coupling, which depends on deformation potential, convert that, and the conversion then gives you m d squared divided by v squared. Now you can see where I'm going. M, of course, is 1 over Fermi velocity, right? So that means this effective lambda will be very, very strongly enhanced in this system because Fermi velocity is going to 0, okay? So it's flat band. Flat band means mass is infinite. When mass is infinite, this coupling is very, very large. This is the essence of the work, okay? I mean, and as somebody said, the supplementary material is in our paper, okay? Around magic angle, you know, there is some resolution. VF is definitely less than 0.1 V graphene, so that makes this 1 over tau very, very large. And this is the dimensionless form for rho, and this 1 over VF squared, additional VF comes in rho compared with 1 over tau. So this 1 over VF squared dependence is crucial. And notice something very important. There is no density dependence here at all. The carrier density, electron hole density, doesn't come into this formula at all. Okay? Only place where density comes in is that this formula applies, you know, this linearity in T applies when T is greater than TBG. So what he's saying, at high temperature, they'll be all parallel, but where they curve over will vary depending on density field.
So I think this formula was driven for the Dirac distribution.
Yeah, of course, we have to derive it for this. It goes through, and our worry was, otherwise you couldn't write a paper, our worry was that once you, so we had to recalculate the wave function matrix element, that makes a 20-30% correction. Okay, so that was what the calculation, otherwise the same as the paper you know very well, Huang et al. But you have to calculate it using this band structure. Okay, we use the simplest band structure, what McDonald did, you know, what Alan did with Rafi, like in 2002. We did not do anything fancy.
Only change the prefactors, but not necessarily.
It changes by order one, is what I'm saying, okay? The wave function of it. So this is very important, because this is the pristine prediction of the theory, that the resistivity of twisted bilayer graphene, when it's linear, would not depend on the carrier density, except for the fact that the bending over will depend on carrier density. Okay, so this is, you know, this is a falsifiable prediction, and we'll see whether, and this is all in this paper, all of these things are in this paper. Okay. All right, so let me tell you that this linear in T that I'm talking about is actually very known among people who work on 2D gallium arsenide system, where, you know, 2D gallium arsenide systems are actually the best metals in the world, much better metal than very pure metals, because Lorentz Pfeiffer can grow samples which have no impurity at all. So even at 10 to the 9 per square centimeter, it's the system conduct. So here is a paper I wrote a long time ago with Mike Lilly and Jim Eisenstein and others, and here, this is experiment. Look how linear it is. This linearity goes to the base temperature. Base temperature is 25 millikelvin. So 25 millikelvin to 5 Kelvin, this is where the data stop. It's linear. And I'm sure if this data didn't stop here, I'll show you theoretical result. Up to 50 Kelvin.
Are we supposed to see linearity in the log and semi-log scale?
Oh, no, this is on the, you're right, it is linear. From here, you don't see it, but it is linear, okay? Let me show you the theory, okay? So, this is the theory for different values of deformation potential coupling. Of course, it changes. And it's linear. Now, in principle, it should be linear to much higher temperature. Why does it stop here? Because in gallium arsenide, optical phonons come in. And above 50 Kelvin, things become like exponential because it's generating optical phonon. Okay? But this is, you know, we say in the paper, this is log-log, you are correct. This is, you cannot see.
Semi-log.
Yeah. So semi-log. It's down to about, if I remember right, 50 to 25 millikelvin, it was linear, okay? I put the whole theory in one page. since the theory is not, you know, not something, I mean, it's not something novel. It's a lot of calculation, but it's not. So what we do is, this is the definition, but I'll go through it quickly. This is the definition of conductivity. So basically, you have to calculate the density of state, the scattering time, and Fermi velocity. And density of state at finite temperature would be energy averaging. And this calculation involves calculating matrix element of your electron phonon Hamiltonian. You have only electron phonon Hamiltonian, which is known. So you can calculate this. And this is where, Philip, answering your question, this is where I use the actual wave function of the twisted bilayer. This is the only difference with what we did before, plus the VF is different. And then, I'll show the numerical results, which is the important thing. But you can then analytically show that when T is very large, meaning large compared with T block Grunison, which for this problem becomes 54 square root of n, because these things are all known, you get this. This is what you get in low temperature. I'm not going to talk about low temperature. On a high temperature, you get linear behavior in this. Okay. So this is the theory that we have, and I'm going to show you numerical results. And this is the analytic expansion for very large temperature and very low temperature.
Ankur?
Yeah.
Can I ask a Russian question?
Yeah.
What's your Hamiltonian?
Oh, the acoustic phonon electron interaction. So it's D, electron operator, phonon operator, square root of Q. It's a standard, very standard acoustic phonon which applies to graphene in the continuum. There's nothing fancy here. It's just then doing the calculation right is the correct thing. So,
but you talk about, just to make sure, so it's all acoustic phonon.
Oh, yeah, very important point. We only have in-plane acoustic phonon in our calculation, don't have anything else. Because that's what I showed you before, the calculation I did in 2008. We convinced ourselves that's the important phonon mode, and then Phillips' experiment agreed really quantitatively. So that's the motivation. Other phonons can be included. I have other papers that include other phonons. Other phonons can be included.
But probably frozen out there.
Yeah, but we don't include them here. I mean, that's, you know, that's that can certainly be done, but they're not included, okay? So for example, the outer plane phonon, those things are not. It's just the in-plane acoustic phonon, okay? Very important question, actually.
So what is the Fermi velocity if you, for example, change doping in the band, the Fermi velocity will change a lot?
The Fermi velocity, it's Fermi velocity mainly depends on the twist angle. At the magic angle, in principle, it's vanishing.
But maybe at the crossing point, I'm saying if you change to the dark.
Right. So
the doping will change.
Right. So that is included. You'll see that. Okay. So there is some density dependent, but whatever that dependence is turns out to be very weak.
Yes.
Okay. The main dependence is the twist angle dependence because it's varying. Okay. If that dependence is strong, it would have shown up, but that dependence is very weak. So this is what we found for pure, I already showed you this result, pure monolayer graphene, not Moir pattern. So this is known results. I already talked about it, so let me go on to what we do. So this is what we do. We take the simplest band structure of the system. Band structure can be improved. The whole thing then has to be done numerically. I mean, you know, those integrals can be done. That integral equation can be solved with anybody's favorite band structure. I don't think results will change much, meaning qualitatively, but some of the numbers will change. So our current work doesn't include that, and I'm debating whether to do it or not. In the end, the results will be very similar, I think. Okay? So this is the model. You all know the model, so I'm not going to go through it. So this is how Fermi velocity in this model varies. And phonon velocity is here. You know, so these are the two parameters. Deformation potential coupling, we take the same number. Deformation potential coupling is in general not known. We take the same number that we had in monolayer graphene. It could change a little bit. If it changes, the results will change. And this is all things I already told you, so let me just go to the... So, you know, this is the integral you get, and you have to do this integral, and these are the results now, okay? So let me spend a minute up on these results. So this is what rho looks like for different angles, okay? And as you can see, one specific prediction is very strong radical dependence on the twist angle. Okay, so this is rho omega. This is for some fixed density. I don't remember what density it is. Okay, it's for some fixed density, just varying angle. This is fixed angle varying density. And as you can see, the only density dependence shows up in this part. This is what Andrea was telling you, that where it bends over depends on density. But when you go to high temperature, they're all parallel. So we have two specific predictions. One is there should be very, very strong dependence on twist angle and no dependence of d rho dt or rho. Rho is parallel. D rho dt on density. You know, these are pretty non-trivial predictions, and the resistivity should be high. As you can see, resistivity numbers are high.
Okay. You don't mean no dependence, you just mean weak dependence.
Very weak dependence, yeah. I don't mean no dependence. The dependence is weak, okay? Yeah.
In particular, I guess we get a peak in d squared rho dt squared that vanishes as density goes to zero.
You're absolutely correct, but you see that regime, other effects will come in, so I do not know to what extent I'll believe it. The problem happens is that the reason is very simple. This theory makes sense when the phonon resistivity dominates all other resistivities, okay? Now, I have done lots of theories where disorder and other things contribute, and I'll do them here also, but that has not been done yet, okay? So, yeah.
So, I'm just curious about one thing. The concavity seems right. Different, and than the experiment. You're saying that that's because
no, this do not add any significance to this part in comparing the experiment, just add a significance to that. This part will be totally modified once you have disorder or something. Okay. So let me now, he has already stood up, so let me just skip this, I've already done that, because comparing the experiment is important. Let me just skip. So now I'll come to the question that somebody raised, maybe Pablo. So this is data. I'm going to now show data from three groups. Two of them are working in collaboration, Columbia and UCSB and MIT. Okay, so this is data from Columbia UCSB collaboration. And as you can see, this resistivity, this part looks very much like the theory I just showed you. Okay, very much like. I'm going to show you comparison in a second. Okay, then finally something happens. I don't want to talk about this now. We have some understanding of it. But it's literally no density dependence, and resistivity is zero, DT is parallel. Okay.
I think in theory, the slope was about 10 factor 10 smaller.
Compared to the experiment you're saying. Yeah. You're very, very observant. I'm coming to that. So the numbers, but remember, numbers depend on D square, and D is not known very well. Okay, so I'm coming to that. Yeah, it's a very good point. So this is what theory says. Very good point, Lanya. This is what theory says, okay, from this. And this is the experiment. And as you just said, it's smaller. As you can see, it's smaller. Qualitative is correct, but it's smaller. Okay? So what do you have to do to make it agree? It turns out that if you multiply by 2 to 3, it agrees. Okay, that's was empirically found. I'm just telling you that. Now comes the important point. So enhanced phonon coupling. So D is not known precisely. Even in gallium arsenide, when I first started work in 1992, I found that a SAS system as well known as that, people use D from 6 electron volt to 30 electron volt, factor of 5 different. And so we actually spent 5 years trying to determine what that D is by comparing and so on. It turned out it's in the middle. It's something like 15 electron volt, okay? D is not from, yeah.
The velocity you use, is it from DFT value?
Or no, it's from the simple Bischoff-McDonald type theory. But we can use the DFT value also. I do not see. I want to emphasize the quality dependence because of this factor of 2 that you're seeing here. But the important thing is to point out so this is, I would say, the reasonable agreement with UCSB, Columbia collaboration, proviso this factor of 2, this slope, factor of 2 is in D over V, okay? So good qualitative agreement, quantitative agreement if D over VS is adjusted. I will mean that, things may be affected by Moir pattern. We are not including effects of Moir pattern on the phonons. Now what happens with MIT? This is the MIT data, where things do not agree. This is figure 2C, Pablo, from your paper. Well, it turns out the same factor of 2 gives agreement here also. So this is, I asked Feng Cheng to look at, take your results and just fit to our theory. Is a factor, you can see that it's the same factor of 2.5 here comes in, okay? So I do not mean the coincidence or not. Both data require something like a factor of 2.5.
Just to make it clear, our paper is mostly focusing on what happens below 10 Kelvin.
There, I do
apart
not think.
Because we see resistivity linear to 0.5 Kelvin, which, from what I could quickly see in the Columbia data, also near the correlating insulator goes much lower than linear.
So, what I think we should do, we should offline sit down and discuss this. Because if the data are different, no theory will agree with both data.
Yeah.
Let's hope not. Okay.
That's the question I was asking. It wasn't clear to me that the data are similar. So.
Look, if the data are different, the theory cannot agree with both data. I hope
that's
not. So let me just, let's talk
about
it. Conclusion is next. So this is the calculation of 1 over tau. You can see there is your KBT line. It can be above, below, wherever you want, depending on mass and so on. So next figure will be my conclusion. So strange metallicity in twisted bilayer graphene, definitely the metallicity is strange by the definition strong correlation community has used. It's actually stranger than anything I have seen, I have to tell you that, okay? So that's a correct statement, okay? Resistivity is very high, very linear, and very large linear resistivity, okay, independent of density. D rho dt is of the order of 100 omega Kelvin per Kelvin compared to 0.1, it's a huge number. Rapid increase of D rho dt, this is true in both groups. Experiment. The question is the details do not quite work out. All these features are explained. The numbers do not completely work out. I already told you, but it's within a factor of 2. And the rest I already emphasized. So let me just stop here instead of repeating what I already said. So that people can go to lunch and the questions I'm happy to answer.
question, and then those who want to stay, those who want to go for lunch, go for lunch.
Yeah. Okay, so just one comment. You know, so there's a qualitative difference between a normal metal and between this system and, let's say, a monolayer graphene sheet. And that is that you have, as you were saying, a small Brouhaha zone for electrons, but to your approximation, a big Brouhaha zone for phonons, right? And that means that Umklapp effects will give you access to more phonons. Mm-hmm. And you won't see, you won't see strictly linear in T dependence above this block Grignard temperature in the theory, if you include those.
Since this is a continuum approximation of pretty complex band structure, Umklapp is included generically to extended zone thing. We do not cut off the fig anywhere. So Umklapp is included.
No,
but
it's not. So the point is that when you scatter in a Fermi surface within a Brouhaha zone, you can generate a phonon that has, you know, wave vector Fermi surface size plus
But isn't that also equivalent to using interband scattering in the within the Moir super lattice?
That's a different effect.
Right.
But
right.
Within
this is a good point.
Intraband scattering has
intraband scattering with very large phonon wave vector, right?
So there will be, and I would guess that the relative weight is, it's kind of. How big, what's the structure of these wave functions within the Moiré cell? So they're substantial, they're not plane waves.
They're not plane waves.
And that means you will excite. There is a matrix element.
Right.
For creating.
I do not know their magnitude. And in the simple model, that cannot be included. Because if I just include them naively.
No, it's included in the simple model for adjusted.
Yeah, so that probably will change linear in T slightly, not very much, right?
It
could increase the magnitude.
Interestingly, it will make the slope go up with temperature, right? So that might also be the factor of
the disagreement.
Yeah.
That may be one factor I didn't think about. That may be one of the factors of disagreement. So you should look into it. That will effectively raise the resistance at high temperature.
Yeah.
So it could be that it's not the problem is not D. Problem is actually that there is a lot of Umklapp. I cannot rule that out. I didn't think about it. I cannot rule that out.
Right. Thank you very much.